He is walking like the perimeter of my property. I was like, okay, that's a 911 call. Now come on my property, trespass. So I call 911 and I say, hey, the guy I called earlier about, it's getting weird. He's now on my property putting items in my mailbox. Please send a deputy now. They're like, okay, we're on our way. And I hang up. And within the time that I called 911, he made it to the back of our house, which has two doors. And I start hearing him screaming and yelling. And he's picking up pots, like planted pots, and smashing them down. And then he starts trying the door, then banging, then smashing.
Well, alrighty, gang, welcome back to the Active Self Protection Podcast. I am yet again your host, Mike Williver, and I remain your favorite former Fed. With us today is a new friend of mine. Her name is Sarah. Sarah lives in the Commonwealth of Virginia. I believe it's a Commonwealth. She is a working mom, a military spouse, and has three kids. Sarah, welcome. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. So, Sarah and I, you know, everyone, obviously, we talk before we hit the record button, and she had some questions. About the format of the thing. You know, if you're out there listening to this or any of the other episodes and you feel like there's a better format or something we could do differently that you think might help draw these stories out or whatever, just let us know. We live on comments and on reviews. So you can leave a review and let us know how terrible you think I am or how great I'm doing, either one. With that said, Sarah, you said you're a military spouse. We're not going to discuss any specifics as it involves the military, but I think we could start off with something that you mentioned during our pre-interview, which was, you know, that I don't think people who've never been in or around the military appreciate. I think people think, well, you move a lot, you know, you move once in a while and that's really hard and the kids got to change schools, but there's a lot of other sort of factors involved in all that moving around and the regulations of living on a military base. It's not the same as living, you know, out in town among civilians. So can you just kind of give us an idea of what some of those issues are as you see them?
Yeah, so we've always lived off base. So I guess it's a different kind of problem. But one is like local area familiarization. When you move to a new place, right, we're using GPS everywhere we go. We don't know where the good spots are, where the bad spots are. Also, our gun laws, access to firearms in your home, also open carry. What are the concealed laws in the new state that you're moving to? If you can even bring a firearm to the new state you're moving to, how long is your spouse going to be gone for? Do you even have a support system at the new place where you are yet? Or is it just you and your kids? So that it's so multi-layered, right? And lots of the times our spouses are so busy that actually training us with a firearm is like one of the last things that they not that they want to do, but that we make time for, right? So there's it's very multi-layered. And then when you're on base, there's also, you know, different regulations. You can't have firearms. If you do, they have to be registered. It's a very convoluted approach to it, I believe, but there's a reason. So
Yeah, I think I don't know, maybe we could start a movement to change the way the regulations are on military bases. I think some of our elected representatives might want to take that up as a cause that they didn't know existed. You know what I mean? Maybe like a Dan Crenshaw type could take this issue up in Congress and say, hey, at the very least, I would like to see it be uniform, no matter where what base you're on, as long as you're stateside. Obviously, overseas is a different story. We can't, you know, control the laws in another country. But at the very least, I think we should consider the possibility of making that topic a lot easier and clearer. We talk a lot, Sarah, in this space about how gun laws differ from place to place. You know, as you mentioned, you know, what you can do in New York, maybe you can't do in New Mexico, and vice versa. But I think that maybe at least on the military base itself, some uniformity would be a good thing. If you're off base, like you said, you're in off base housing. Is it a and you'll have to answer this question, but I don't want to get too specific. Is the off-base housing always owned by the government, or sometimes do people rent places and the government sort of helps pay your rent or your lease or whatever?
Yeah, so you get a basic allowance for housing. So you can choose to purchase a home, you can choose to rent a home. If you live on base, you're forfeiting that allowance.
Oh, okay.
So a lot of people purchase their own homes. That's what we've always done, or rented, but there isn't generally base housing located off base.
So with that, with the government giving you that allowance, does that give them the right to tell you, for example, what you could or couldn't do in your house vis-a-vis firearms or whatever? They don't.
No.
Okay. On base, it's different
strictly
story.
Yes, it's strictly post on base.
Okay. So on regulations. So, for example, because I don't know, I haven't, you know, lived on a base since I was very young. What is the rule, and is it uniform across the country in any base where if you're living on post in an apartment or a house, can you have a firearm in that place? Is that legal? Do you have to register it, like with the base, with the provost marshal or whatever?
You have to register it with the base, and I believe, please don't quote me on this, I believe that there is a limit, and I do not believe that you can carry on base.
Okay.
So, like, whenever you go, like, there's hunting grounds right on base, and so people do bring their firearms on base, but they have to be registered. You have to let them know when you're coming on base. They're checking you at the gate, making sure you're squared away. But I can't speak to any limit or actually when you're living on base, what that looks like on a day-to-day basis in terms of a carry.
Okay, interesting. And then I had another question, and I'm getting old, Sarah, and it left my tiny little pea brain already. I'll think of it later. It's okay. So, again, in our pre-interview, you talked about at some length about the sort of the ability of your spouse and you to do training, to have a plan. You're moving constantly, so your situation changes. Did you guys have sort of a self-defense sort of mindset before the incident we're going to talk about happened? Is it something you considered frequently?
It wasn't until, so he goes away. The longest he's been away is like 16 months, but that was just recently. But up till then, it's been like a month, 3 months, 6 months here. Mm-hmm. So we had a general plan, but it was kind of like point and shoot. Here's how it works. Here's how you chamber one. And that was the extent of it. I'd never even shot it before.
Okay.
And then he left for a longer period of time. And during that time, I went to training. There was a range near me, which again, that's another, when you're a military spouse, hopefully there's a range nearby where right. We live. It's a horrible range and it's not even worth shooting at really just because it's in such bad condition. I'd always had like a plan. If I was out with my kids, what would I do if there was an active shooter? Mm-hmm. But in our home, it was kind of like, okay, get the kids secure. And then I attempt to speak loudly and meanly to whoever was in my home, but then also use deadly force if necessary. But in the actual execution of that, we hadn't trained.
Okay.
So I started training using a firearm at the range and going through all of the motions and learning the parts of the gun. And then when he was gone, I had a solid like nighttime ritual, morning ritual I did. So it wasn't just actually until recently, like within the last 4 years, that we really started having a solid plan. But never trained for that crazy adrenaline rush. So that's one thing I'm still working on.
It's hard to train. I'm not sure that you can train for it, honestly. The adrenaline rush and the adrenaline dump are things that your body does without your permission. It just does them in the background. And I'm sure you've heard, you know, people in the military, for example, who go on deployment more than once, can get that sort of stress inoculation where it's not as bad, but I don't know any other way to minimize the physiological effects of a fight or flight response or a critical incident on the human body. I think it's just one of those things you have to deal with, you know, when it comes and as it comes. So you were just talking about having a plan in your home, and I think you made a great distinction, which is the difference between having a gun around and having a gun and a plan, you know, having tools and a plan. The active self-protection, our motto is attitude, skills, and plan, ASP. And the plan is huge. The skills involves training, and the attitude obviously is that you've thought about potentially a critical incident before any one of them happens, and B, you're mentally, you've had conversations with yourself and with your God and with your family about what to do and whether or not you're ready to potentially injure someone or take a human life to defend yours or that of your family. And you strike me as someone who is already had all of those conversations. So your incident happened in and around your home. So about how long ago did this happen?
It was last May of 2023. So
Okay, May of 2023. Okay, so earlier this year. And just kind of in your own words, walk us through what happened, what alerted you to the fact that there was a problem and kind of what went on from there.
Okay. It's kind of long, so bear with me.
No, that's fine. We have no time limit.
So there's a plaza near our home that's full of all different kinds of stores. It's massive. And I was with my kids and we were leaving this plaza, and this man started just kind of weaving between the cars, waiting to exit onto the main road. And I just kind of looked at him and I was like, that's weird. We don't usually, transients don't usually come down this far. Like, we're getting into farmland.
He's on foot.
Okay. He's wearing a hiking backpack. Just kind of has that look of a little bit of craziness. And was dodging cars, just very erratic with his behavior and his mobility. So I just kind of like took a note, that's weird. Turned, came to our home, was playing outside with my youngest, and my two other ones were in the house. And our house is L-shaped. So from the backyard, you can't really see what's happening in the front yard. You can see the driveway, but you can't see if someone comes to the front door. And my son says, "Mama, that there's a man on our front yard." And then my daughter comes running to the backyard. "Someone just knocked on the door. He's asking for stuff. Can you come to the front yard?" So I walk around to the front and there's the guy. Immediately I'm thinking, okay, this is weird. Like all my alarms go off.
Sure.
He's standing in my driveway with a box of empty condoms and a box of empty pregnancy tests, brand new.
Like you do. I mean, who hasn't done that?
You know, totally normal to just be walking around, pretty much farmland area with these items.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I just kind of look at him oddly, and he goes, "Oh, I was just picking up trash down the street." And I was like, "Okay, there's lie number one. That was like a dead ringer. Like, that's not garbage. Those are perfectly preserved." I was like, "Well, you're free to throw them away in my garbage can. Please do that."
Okay.
And so then he starts asking me, "Can I use your hose?" And I was like, "My hose? Yeah, I have dried beans. I need to let them soak overnight to eat them." And I was like, interesting choice of food for someone who is a transient. You know?
Talk about conversations you didn't predict having when you woke up that morning. Talking to a man with pregnancy tests and condoms and a can of beans who just needs your hose to soak them, you know, like you do. Now you go to your neighbor's house. "I need to borrow your hose. I got beans to soak." Anyway, so what happened then?
So I said, "You cannot use my hose. You're not staying here on my property while you soak your beans. I will give you a bottle of water and I'll tell you that services are that way."
Mm-hmm. Good.
And
firm.
My kids are like very friendly. So they start asking him questions. He totally ignores them, like doesn't even acknowledge that they are alive, and just starts going on about his relationship with his mom. "It's a troubled relationship. I hope your kids listen to you better than I listen to my mom." Right. And so all my red flags are still going off on this guy. But I just tell him services are that way. He goes the opposite way of all the services out to farmland.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, all right. I just watched him kind of leave, you know, the property. And so we all come inside after that, cause my husband is out of town. Right. We come inside and I call my husband. I say, "Hey, this weird thing just happened. I just got the heebie-jeebies about it. Just letting you know, my plan is XYZ. So my plan was, if he came back around onto our property again, I was going to call the non-emergency number, just to let them know what was going on.
For like local police or sheriffs or whatever.
Yeah, local police, not an emergency, but something weird's happening.
Thank you, by the way. I want to interject. Thank you very much, for understanding that number exists, you know. And considering calling it when there's not a legitimate emergency going on, that's something a lot of people don't realize you can even do. They call 911 because there's a dog barking too loudly next door or whatever. They don't understand the distinction. But I wanted to ask, you said heebie-jeebies. How bad of a feeling did you get from this guy as you're standing there in the front yard talking to him? Was it a, "Oh my God, he's a serial killer," or it's just, "He's weird"? Like, what was, you kind of rate your level of uncomfortability with that conversation?
It was kind of like, I feel like he could have like just lit off at any moment.
Okay.
Kind of weird. Like, kind of like, let's just, you know, pacify him and give him a bottle of water, send him on his way. It wasn't a serial killer vibe at all. It was just like, this is weird. I don't think whatever is happening is going to end well. I don't think this is the last time I'm going to see him, just from his behavior, not even listening to any of my advice of like, "Hey, you go that way, it's, you know, you're going to find food and resources. And I just told my kid, I said to my kids, okay, we're coming in now. You know, I think he needs a little help with, his brain is sick, I think, a little bit. And he might need a little help. So you have to listen to my instructions from now on without any questions being asked. And now we have changed that, I should interject, to if I say 911 to them and I give a command, they do it without asking.
Interesting. That's great.
No questions. They just do it and that's it. We can talk. We can have an after action after everything is done with any questions they have. But they know at that point, there's an emergency. This is how I'm keeping you safe. Do it. Don't even talk. Just do it.
Right.
Okay. So he disappears. We all come inside. I lock all the windows and doors. I make sure that my gun is good to go. It's currently in the safe, and making sure there's one in the chamber. Leave it in there. Leave it locked up. Send the kids into the basement while I make dinner. So our window faces across the street to like farmland. It's been about an hour since I encountered him, maybe hour and a half. And I look across the street and he is standing there totally naked, staring right at our window, dumping the water bottle out. And I was just like, oh,
man. How far away is he from the actual front of the house?
He's about, from the side of our house, he's probably 150 feet.
Okay.
Maybe 100 feet.
Not a stick. This is, by the way, folks, I'm hearing this for the first time as you are. Didn't see that coming. So not a stitch of clothing.
No, all of his clothing is at his ankles. Doesn't have a shirt on. Hmm. And he's just staring at our house, dumping the bottle of water I gave him out. And I was like, okay, this has just now escalated a little bit.
Yeah.
This is going to get weird. So I called the non-emergency number and I said, hey.
I can tell you're a military spouse. You're like, this is going to get weird. No, it's already gotten weird. Okay, so yeah. you called.
It's going to get worse.
You call more weird. Yeah. So you call the police and what do you tell them?
Yeah, I said, this guy is outside. He is naked across the street and he is, he's just being erratic. So then by the time I get off the phone, he has pulled up his pants and he is now running into the middle of the road, grabbing garbage, putting it in a pile in the middle of the road. Just erratic is the only word I can use mm-hmm. to describe him. So then I called emergency number again saying, hey, he's now running into the road. He's now a danger to himself and other people.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're sending someone. They'll be on their way. I just kind of keep watching him. Kids are in the basement still. Keep watching him. He does it for about 20 minutes. Then he goes back over across the street and disappears again. So I'm call my husband, update him, let him know what's going on.
So real quick, how much time has elapsed between you first calling and you calling your husband approximately?
First calling the non-emergency number?
Yeah, the first time you called him and said, hey, there's a weirdo. He's naked and he's dumping out water.
Probably at an hour and a half now.
Okay, and then
Maybe two.
Give us an idea of the size of the town that the base is near, at least. I know we don't want to get specific, but like, is it you know, out in the middle of nowhere, or is it near a big city
no.
or a small town? Or so the reason I'm asking is like the agency responding, is it a tiny little agency or is it a, you know, or reasonably sized? They have resources. Okay.
Yeah.
So it's not like two deputies within 100 miles. It's like there's people around. They just haven't gotten to you yet.
There's people outside. You know, there's deputies patrolling around everywhere all the time. So I was starting to get frustrated that no one's showing up. And we swear someone's on their way, you know, and I'm like, okay, I'm just going to keep watching for him. So probably I feed the kids because I don't see him anywhere. So I bring food down to the kids, come back up. They're in like our bomb shelter basement. That's essentially what I call it. You can't hear anything or see anything from down there.
Mm-hmm.
So then he reappears. This is now like 3 hours past the time I first saw him in our driveway. He reappears. He has different clothing on than he had before.
Wardrobe change. I didn't see that coming either, by the way.
He is walking like the perimeter of my property. And we have like almost an acre and a half. And so he's walking the perimeter and he comes and puts something in our mailbox. And I was like, okay, that's a 911 call. Like you've now come on my property, trespassed, and puts, I have no idea what it could be. No clue. So I call 911 and I say, hey, the guy I called earlier about, it's getting weird. He's now on my property putting items in my mailbox. Please send a deputy now. They're like, okay, we're on our way. And I hang up. And within the time that I called 911, he made it to the back of my house. And I like lost him and I couldn't find him. He made it to the back of our house, which has two doors. So L-shaped, right? This way and this way. And there's a door on each part. And I start hearing him screaming and yelling, and he's picking up pots, like planted pots, and smashing them down. And then he starts trying the door, then banging, then smashing, and still screaming the whole time.
So he's trying another, not
So,
the front door though. He's trying like a back or side door.
not the front door. Yeah, he's trying the back doors.
And did he have to get over any fences to get back there, or is it just an open lot?
Nope, just walk. Yeah, it's open lot. And so I run and get my gun and have it on me, and I call 911. I say, this is escalating. He's now trying to break in. You need to send someone now. I am armed and I'm waiting by the two doors that he would access if he actually does get in the house. And they're like, okay, we're sending someone, we're sending someone.
Yeah, I've heard that before. It's 3 hours later. Where is this
I
deputy,
know. Well,
please?
I'm sure they could tell I was super frustrated in my voice. Like, I told you guys about this many hours ago, nothing's been done.
I think the audience would agree. You have every right to be frustrated. This is an issue, and they haven't sent anyone. It's been hours now. I don't, an agency that big. It'd be one thing if you're in, I like to use Yavapai County, Arizona. It's a huge county, and there's not enough deputies to go around. But that's not the problem here. They just haven't sent someone. But
Yeah.
so you call them back. You're like, hey, I'm armed. This is where he is. This is what he's doing. And they're like, okay, we're sending someone. Did they send someone?
So I stayed on the phone with them as he's still banging around back there, yelling, screaming. And they said, okay, someone's there. So I go out front, and the deputy, which to me, I feel like there was a miscommunication, or maybe he got the non-emergency dispatch and never got the emergency dispatch. Because he just comes like gingerly, takes a while to get out of his car, gingerly walks to my front door. Hey, what's going on? And I was like, he's trying to break in my back door right now. I'd put my gun away by the time I got to the front door.
Right. I was
And I
going to
said,
ask.
he's trying to break in my back door. And he was like, oh. And so he ran around the back. And so I watched the whole thing. I couldn't see what was going on back there because all the windows have blinds on them. And I also didn't want him to see me standing there because I thought it would further agitate him. In retrospect, I probably should have been a lot more forceful with my words with him, or at least let him know that I was there and I've called 911. They're coming, but I didn't feel comfortable with that because he knew I had kids in the home.
Yeah, and by
And
the
that
way,
was.
in the back of your mind has got to be at least a little bit. This guy's in my house, which means obviously he knows where I live. And at the end, I would be thinking as far ahead as, well, whenever this is all over, and he's not going to go to prison for the rest of his life for whatever he's doing right now, he still knows where I live, and he's nuts, and he's going to come back here potentially. Was that going through your mind at all?
Oh, absolutely. Well, while I was standing back there with my weapon, I just kept praying, like, God, please not today. Like, today, I do not want to have to discharge this firearm. Like, not with my kids here, not in this situation. And the adrenaline is just insane at that point, right? Like, when you're praying that, it's like, okay, God, I'm trusting you, but I'm trained, and you have given me my brain and my intuition and my free will as well. So I watched the whole thing, the arrest take place in the backyard, and he starts speaking in Spanish to the police officer. He's not Hispanic. Starts speaking in Spanish about how well he knows me. So I speak Spanish, so I knew what he was saying.
Hey, me too. I bet he didn't see that coming. No, so si, señor oficial, somos amigos, todo está bien.
Yeah, so he just starts going on about there's a mom who lives here. She has three kids. I just wanted to come see her again. I saw her before. Going on and on, and the officer didn't understand. So he brings him to the front, puts him in his car, and comes and asks me, do you know this guy? Like, he's telling me he knows you. I was like, I've never seen him in my life. I have no clue who he is. And I look out back, and all of my potted plants have been either dumped out or like dug through In retrospect, my thought is he was looking for a key back there just because there were so many of them. But he also buried some of his clothing in the pots, like took the plants out, put his clothes in, put dirt on top of it.
Sir, are you saying that, are you trying to suggest that you don't ever bury your clothes? Perfectly normal behavior. I thought this is officially the weirdest story, by the way, we've had on this show. So, and I'm sure it doesn't get any less weird. So, do the police end up taking him and charging him with anything?
So, this is very interesting, actually. They asked me what I want to charge him with. And so, we're having this conversation, right? I said, clearly going to trespass him, of course. That's not a charge, but it's just something in writing. So, if he comes back on our property, you know, it's known that he can't trespass and we'll come and arrest him. But then there was a female officer who said to me, well, you know, the lewdness charge, I think we should go after that because there's high school graduation around here tomorrow and we don't want him being naked in the middle of the street. And I was like, he just tried to break into my home and we're worried about him being naked for, you know, appearance sake.
In her
defense, that's the wrong.
In her defense, I think she couldn't have possibly meant that's all we're going to charge him with. Or was that the impression that you got?
That was kind of the impression I got because they weren't sure to what extent the damage of property was in the backyard because it was like all plants and pots and they're kind of like, we can't use that. But it was actually like a good amount of money.
Yeah, destruction of property. I would probably go with attempted burglary. The lewd and lascivious. Did your kids happen to see him?
No.
They
were in the basement. The whole time that was going on, but they ended up charging him. So I trespassed him. I have a protection order against him, a no contact order. And he also got charged with entering property to damage and destruction of property with intent to harm.
Okay. That's good.
So he plead out, he got 30 days in jail and has to pay us restitution for what he destroyed.
Are you holding your breath for those checks to start coming in any day now?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
I also did make with the prosecutor, I said, he needs mental help. Like that needs to be part of this plea deal.
100%.
There's some mental health care for him. And so he has to every 30 days check in at a mental health facility.
Do you see this guy around ever?
I've never seen him again.
Okay, that's good.
I shared his picture with all of our neighbors to let them know, hey, if this guy comes around. But again, it was just like such a random thing. We live in a weird part of our county where it's like, once you go past our house, it's all farmland. So people don't usually, there aren't usually people walking around here.
The question I forgot to ask you earlier was how do you think he figured out where you lived? Did he follow you from the mall?
I don't even think he realized that it was connected.
Just coincidence?
I think he was just walking down our street after, because we're like 2 minutes from that plaza. So I think it was just like he just kept walking. And maybe he recognized my car and it was like, oh, they were just there. But he never made eye contact with me at the plaza.
Okay.
And didn't see my kids either because our windows are shaded. So
him being your house was just coincidence. That's where he ended up.
I think it was. I think it was just, which there's three, four houses before you get to mine from where he was. So mm-hmm. Why did he stop at our house? Not the other, you know, just very interesting.
You know, something I have learned over the years, my earliest jobs in security and law enforcement, I dealt with a lot of transient people. Excuse me. And what I learned quickly was don't ask why about literally anything, because frequently that's just the last question you want to ask. Who, what, when, where? Sure. Why? Why are you in my driveway with condoms and, you know, a condom box and pregnancy tests? Why are you nude? Why are you soaking beans with, you know, using my hose? None of this stuff makes any sense. So let's talk about lessons. I know there were some things you specifically wanted to address as it relates to the incident. What do you think we're our own worst critic, right? So what do you think you would do differently or do or not do now that you can look back on this in hindsight?
Well, since then we have put cameras at the front entrance and the back entrance of our home. We had them, but since we had just newly moved, again, military family, we hadn't gotten to it yet, which would have alerted me that someone was on the front and I could have been a little more proactive about getting to him before he came to our door where my kids were. Also, I probably should have been a lot more assertive when the first meeting with him. I feel like I was, but I could have been even more so. Like, if you come on my property again, I'm going to call the police. I probably shouldn't have given him that bottle of water, because I feel like then it was like he thinks a connection was made to me.
Well, you've known him for years. I mean, he told the officer that, so you guys have been buddies for a long time.
Yeah. And I'm trying to think of any other ones. I probably would have called 911 sooner once, because there was no non-emergency response to it.
Right.
But also, I mean, is running into the middle of the street a crime or an emergency? And I'm always very cautious to call 911 if it isn't a true emergency.
Right.
And
every law enforcement officer and dispatcher thanks you for that, by the way. Most people, like I said, they just call 911 for whatever reason. As far as you being more assertive, I didn't ask me for any feedback, but I bet you were as assertive as you needed to be at that point. You couldn't know what was going to happen. I mean, you're probably talking to him like you would talk to kind of anybody, but it sounds like he had pretty contaminated thinking. So, you know, you could have said pretty much anything at that point. It wouldn't have made, in my estimation, probably any difference. He's going to do what he's going to do, regardless of how you interact with him. And I don't think you being any more stern probably would have made that much of a difference. Can I ask about the firearm? You talking about a pistol or a long gun, or what is it you had?
No, a pistol.
Okay. And this is something you'd practice with at least, gone to the range and shot. Okay.
Yep. Yeah. Multiple times.
How far away was your spouse when this was going on? Was he in the next city over or a different country?
No, he was in the States, but he was not within getting home within any reasonable amount of time. So for him, it was torture. He was like just, you know, dying.
I can imagine.
But he, you know, I mean, he trusts me. He trusts that I would make the right decisions and the right choices. But again, that's one of those when you're a military spouse. I mean, I think every place you go to, you need to come up with a new plan.
That's actually a great point.
Because you have a different house, different layout every time you move. So every plan needs to be adjusted, not just for self-defense, but also like a fire emergency plan. All of the plans need to be adjusted. And I think that falls through the cracks because you're so busy first moving and then.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. You're dealing with your kids and new schools and new everything, new friends, new acquaintances, you know, a new social scene. There's a lot to it. So I could see where sort of a self-defense and a home protection plan wouldn't be the number one thing on your list of things to do. But I think it's important to consider that. And also what people may not consider is the things you may need to protect against might be different from place to place. Like you don't need, I live in Tucson, Arizona. You don't really need much of a wildfire plan. If you live where I live, they're not getting to you, but they did when I lived in San Diego. That was a real possibility. So that's something you had to consider. Where am I going to go if the wildfire is cresting the hill behind my house, or tornadoes or blizzards or whatever? That stuff changes from place to place as well. I think what I want to highlight here is the fact that you didn't allow normalcy bias to kind of rule the day, where you're like, oh, I'm sure this is fine. And we talk about normalcy bias a lot, where people tend to want to normalize things that aren't normal. And it tends to be, and again, this is a broad generality, it tends to be more common among women, but men suffer from it as well, where, if you're walking out to your car at the end of a shift in a parking garage that normally is empty, and there's all of a sudden tonight, there's some guy sort of, 100 yards away walking in your general direction, a lot of people will be like, oh, I'm sure it's fine. Even though the back of their brain is screaming at them, telling them, no, this isn't normal. You need to hurry up and get in your car, get your pepper spray out, or do whatever. And that allows the person to get closer and closer while you're sort of wishing it away. It doesn't sound like you did that at all. It sounds like you recognize this was weird. Let me get my kids inside. Let me put them downstairs. Let me be ready in case something happens. Is that your assessment of your performance that day?
I believe so. I mean, I think I struggle sometimes with the normalcy bias, but also with not being an alarmist. So like I try to fall somewhere in between. I mean, I don't know, but that day, like I've learned to trust my intuition and trust that that bad feeling that you get when the hair on the back of your neck stands up. I've learned you trust that first and foremost. That overrules almost everything else.
Our CEO, Stephanie Widener, she gives a couple of classes, but one of them is focused towards women and women's self-defense. I highly recommend it for anyone who can attend one of her classes. But one of the big points she makes during that class is, if you sense something is wrong, you know, the example I give is, if you're a high school student sitting in science class at 2:30 in the afternoon and you hear a series of loud bangs in the hallway, guess what that's not? It's not fireworks. It's not firecrackers. Nobody brings firecrackers to school and sets them off, you know, and that's an active shooter, probably. You might as well act like it is and act accordingly. Whatever action plan you have, start putting into place. Lock the door, jump out the window, do whatever it is you were going to do. And then if later on it turns out, oh, no, it was somebody with fireworks, unlikely though that may be, or it was something else and there was no active shooter, how am I hurt, you know, by instituting that, by getting that ball rolling? And what Stephanie says is, you have to radically and rapidly accept reality. This is a thing that's happening. Now I have to deal with it some way. Dealing with it could be running away. That's fine too. But I need to accept that it's happening, because until I do, I can't formulate a response. I can't even begin to start responding to a thing that I haven't accepted as happening, if that makes any sense.
No, absolutely. I think when I was standing between the two doors holding my handgun, I was like, all right, this is happening right now. This is really happening. What we've trained for is actually happening. Start to box breathe, Sarah. That's what I said to myself. You know, do that box breathing, get yourself under control and focus.
Yeah, we call it combat breathing. But yeah, I think it's probably roughly the same thing. So you mentioned earlier on, it might have been during a pre-interview, I don't remember, you mentioned trying to train yourself to deal with the adrenaline, the surge of adrenaline, and then the dump of adrenaline once things are over. Talk to us about what that was like for you.
The adrenaline didn't kick in till that 911 call happened, honestly. Mm-hmm. Like, I was kind of just monitoring. This is weird. But as soon as I called 911, because they're so calm, but you're trying to spit out everything you can as fast as possible. Sure. So they can get someone to you as fast as possible. And that's where it started, the adrenaline rush. And then as soon as I grabbed my gun, you're spiking with adrenaline. And then standing back there waiting, you know, okay, is this going to happen today? Or is everybody going home?
Mm-hmm.
And the adrenaline there. So it was interesting. I don't think I've ever had that much of an adrenaline rush before. And afterwards, honestly, like, I don't think I had the adrenaline dump that a lot of people talk about. Like, I talked, my husband made it home like hours and hours and hours and hours later. And we just kind of talked about it. One of the officers was really great. He had young kids, and so he was able to talk to my kids in a very age appropriate way.
Nice.
Because that was, I may have gone a little too far and given them details they didn't necessarily need at the time.
Right.
But he was really great, and he walked them through the whole thing, let them know they're absolutely safe. Your mom did a great job. Mm. The adrenaline rush was there. I don't believe I had the adrenaline dump.
Did you shake at all when it was all over?
No.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Cause, and I always try to let people know, hey, that adrenaline dump at the end, if you find yourself shaking and, you know, having all those sorts of physiological reactions, don't feel bad. You're not a coward. It's not anything wrong with you. That's a very natural response. But again, there's no right or wrong way to deal with the aftermath of one of these things. It sounds like you just didn't have an adrenaline dump, which is interesting.
Yeah. I was focused on my kids, honestly,
and that was
making sure they were okay. Cause it was like, our house was like swarmed with police officer after the first initial police response. Then it was like seven other cars showed up, because right. I think that was like the, oh, we're having a break-in happen right now. So they, when they came upstairs, it was like, oh my gosh, there's lights everywhere. There's so many police officers. So they got a little bit freaked out when they came upstairs. But then it ended.
Throughout the rest of it, though, the kids weren't, they didn't see almost any of this, right? Once you put them downstairs, they stayed downstairs and weren't around. Mm-hmm. Did they see you with a firearm? Okay, so we don't have to talk about what you might have said to them had they seen that. And again, I had a really fantastic question, Sarah, and it has escaped my brain yet again. So let's just kind of recap, I guess, at this point. We discussed the issues with being a military spouse or being in a military family and having to move. We discussed the issues with firearms and where you can and can't carry them. And I really do hope somebody, you would think after Fort Hood, I don't know if you're old enough to remember the Fort Hood debacle, but you would think after that they would have maybe loosened up a little bit, at least the ability for off-duty, active duty people, off-duty, active duty, military, at least the military members, to carry concealed on base, but it's still not a thing as far as I know. We had a gentleman on who was a officer in the armed forces who had an accidental negligent discharge at his place on base. I can't make that happen, but hopefully somebody will run with that baton, because I think, you know, there's no more or less chance of it happening now than ever, but there's still a chance that somebody could wander on our military base or be a military member. In the case of Fort Hood, the guy was a psychologist, if I'm not mistaken, who showed up and started shooting stuff up. So, but I think you responded about perfectly. I might not have gone out and engaged the guy in front of the house. I might've just stayed inside and just hopefully he went away. But by the time he's now banging on your back door, breaking pots, you can't ignore it. You got to deal with it one way or another. And I think you'd handle it just about as well as it could be handled. Is there any advice you have to maybe a new military spouse who is just starting this journey as far as self-defense or defending your home and having to move around, anything like that, that you'd want to tell them in case they're listening?
I would say be aware, familiarize yourself with not only your home, obviously, but the area, the laws in your county. Maybe have a meeting with a police officer and ask. I mean, I ask so many questions all the time to everyone that I meet. Mm-hmm. Just until you have a general idea of, like, if this happens, what charges or what's the response potentially going to be? I would also say just make sure you're trained. If you don't want to use a gun, have something else, have pepper spray, have additional, take jujitsu, take a martial art where you feel also empowered, but it's also training you. And have a plan. Like, I think that's just the biggest part, is have a plan. Because your spouse will leave at some point. They're going to get deployed or they're going to go on extended training. It happens.
A lot of this could have happened if your husband was just at work, mm-hmm. you know, and he could have been half an hour away, and he may or may not have made it home in time to have any difference. Not because he's not capable of defending his family. He's literally just not close enough. He can't, you know. So if your husband or your wife is away at work and they're sort of the protector, I think it's critical that you, as the other half of that relationship and as the protector of the children when your other half is not around, you know, you've got to be in a position to be able to protect yourself and your kids. Because, like I said, your husband could have been at work a half an hour away, and this whole thing might have gone down exactly the same way if the police showed up on time, yada, yada. We can't change all that. But I think I would say, and I think John and Neil and Steph are our other people here would probably say, do all the things that you just talked about. Get some martial arts training. You don't have to become a third degree black belt in anything, but get enough training that you're able to handle yourself, at least in a brief confrontation. Pepper spray is great. You can have pepper spray and a gun. In fact, I highly recommend, and John will tell you the same thing, I recommend having pepper spray on you, especially if you're carrying a gun, because that can be that stopgap between, hey, get away from me, and drawing a firearm. The pepper spray makes for a nice happy medium where, and plus, if down the road you find yourself in a civil suit because you had to shoot someone in self-defense, if you sprayed them first in an attempt to get them to leave you alone or stop doing what they're doing, and that didn't work, how much better does that look to a jury who's looking at you criminally or civilly? It just looks better. I have kept you long enough, Sarah. I really appreciate you reaching out. I know you had a friend encourage you to reach out to us at Active Self Protection. And now that you've met me, hopefully you'll start watching our videos. I would appreciate it. We just don't get enough views. You're the difference today, Sarah. So thank you so much for coming on, and have a wonderful rest of your day.
Thank you. You as well.